When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Welcome, welcome one and all to Knife Talk. We're here for you every week. It's myself, Craig Lockett of Chop Knives, Mareko Momasi of Momasi Fire Arts, and Jeff Bader, Bader Knives. How are you all?
Doing good.
Good to hear your voice.
Yeah, good to hear your voice.
Good. Yeah, I couldn't do last week. But yeah, it's good to be back. Well, I'm not home even now. I'm not in my home studio now, but we'll talk about that later, I'm sure. Mareko, how's it been going?
It's been good. I just had a great conversation, actually, with Will Manning of Heartwood Forge for my Patreon the other day. What was that? Yesterday? Tuesday. Monday. That was on Monday. Last Monday. Anyways, it was really good because he and I have been buddies for a long time. But it had actually been a while since we had checked in and had a decent conversation. Probably close to like 5 years. I think that's when the last time was. But anyways, we had a really good conversation. It was great to hear kind of his origin story a bit and where he's going with his knives. And I think he's doing a really good, like, he's doing great with his business as a knife maker. And he approaches things from a very kind of a different, or I guess non-traditional approach in regards to not really heavily relying on social media, which is cool. And so we had a good chat around that. But otherwise, yeah, things in the shop are going well. I got, let's see, last week, I guess as this is playing, the week before, I was in Sacramento area teaching. And so I've been working on that that knife that I took to the class to demonstrate and show different techniques on. I'm kind of working on finishing that up. I've also been sharpening this week and then helping with, what is it? It's... this weekend is Mayfair for my kid at his school. They put on like a Mayfair and they do like the whole maypole dance and stuff like that. Kind of like a pseudo Beltane kind of situation.
What?
Beltane.
What's Beltane?
So you've heard of Halloween, right?
Of course.
No.
Yes.
So Halloween is based around a Celtic celebration called Samhain. So Beltane is kind of the return of the sun and light and warmth and stuff like that. So it's kind of a spring festival where Samhain is like a transition to the dark and the less light in the winter and fall, or fall and winter, and the end of harvest and all that kind of stuff. So Beltane's kind of the opposite. So we, as well as getting ready for the kids' school stuff, we also do an art walk twice a year. I know a lot of places do art walk like first Friday of the month, but our art walk is only a couple times a year, and it's always a big event, and it's very cool. They had a big, long, like people dress up in all these homemade costumes, basically based on all these various themes of nature and animals and light and the different elements and stuff like that. And it's very cool to see people's creativity come to life. And
so what are you dressing up as?
Bunch
of Wiccans over there. Bunch of fucking Wiccans.
Pagans.
We're
a bunch of pagans over
there.
You're
something, all right.
Yeah. And also just to like cruise around.
Whoa! Don't dodge the question. What are you dressing up as?
I didn't dress as anything. I dressed up as a dweeb watching observer.
Okay.
On the sidelines.
So not Beltane or Samtane, but you're butane.
Butane, yeah.
Belentaint.
The kid does want to do something next year, so I'll let you know as that gets closer what we're getting dressed up as. But we don't have any plans, hard plans right now. But yeah, otherwise it was cool to cruise around and see like live musical performances on the street and various venues and seeing people's artwork firsthand and all the, yeah. to have that exposure, and honestly, to watch the kid experience it was more interesting to me than seeing most of the stuff that we walked around and saw. That's pretty fun. But that's been my last week.
It's pretty good. Yeah. Craig, I got to tell you, you sound like $1 million.
Do I sound expensive?
Yeah. Very expensive. You sound expensive. Sound expensive. You're everything expensive.
Yes. So I'm using a slightly different mic this week. So I'm in Wales in a studio. We're working with a band. Quite a special studio. This is at like a 30 grand mic I'm using.
Damn. Which is, Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, so I said to the studio manager, I said, I've got to do a podcast. Have you got a mic I can use? He was like, yeah, choose whatever you want. Like, I'm going to go for one of the big boys. Yeah, so yeah, it's pretty cool. But yeah, so I'm in Wales again. So when we spoke last time, I was heading to Wales. Since then, I had the holiday with the kids. drove all the way back to France, hoping, and the idea was I was going to fly back the next day because I needed to do some work. And the kids needed to be home and the car needed to be home and all the rest of it. So yeah, the idea was drive to France, have a good sleep, the next day get a plane back here for work. As I'm driving back now, we hear that the planes have been cancelled due to a French airstrike. And I'm like, oh, but yeah, a real pain in the ass. I'm like,
they love it. They love doing that.
But I needed to be back in the UK the next day. So after a sort of a 15, 16 hour drive, had 5 hours sleep, jumped back in the car and came back. Oh,
get the fuck out of here.
Sounds like a fucking death wish.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So 2,000 miles in 2 days.
How many lines of coke are you doing along the way?
That I know how you rock and roll. That poor car seat, you're just farting into it. That poor fucking car seat needs a raise.
Eating just bad food. Yeah.
Beefing into it.
Yeah, but that was last weekend. So I'm rested and I'm over it now. But we're in a beautiful studio here, right up in the Black Mountains in Wales, called Red Kite Studios, and it's the studio where, you know, like Phantom of the Opera, that bam 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 bam, all that was mixed and stuff. And yeah, it's a studio really built for orchestras and classical music. But we're recording some acoustic stuff with this band, and sounds fucking amazing. All wooden floors and wooden walls, and multi-million-pound studio. It's brilliant here.
You're living your dream, dude.
Living the dream at the moment. Yeah, yeah.
Like
really
late in life.
Yeah. Very late in life. Yeah. But no, it's all good. So I'm here for this. I'm coming up to the end of the first week. Now I'm here for another week. Then we go to Rockfield Studios again for 3 days where they can do some vocals. And then I go back home finally, back to the kids. So yeah,
holy shit.
It's a busy time.
Interesting. That sounds like it's a large studio space. How does that affect the actual sound versus kind of a more conventional studio? Like where you're going to be doing the audio or the vocals?
Yeah, like, for example, I couldn't do this podcast there because it would be just too much room noise, like echo, you know? But for, you know, orchestras and acoustic guitars especially, it's got this natural reverb that's just incredible. But yeah, there's booths then. So, you know, for vocals and to put guitar cabs, there's booths which are soundproofed all around this big live room. But yeah, it really is a special place. Yeah. So the owner of the studio, he's got his Grammys here and stuff, you know, from doing, let's say, Cats and Phantom of the Opera and Miss Saigon and all those. It's pretty special here. So yeah, enjoying it, really am. But it's fucking rained every day since we've been here. So we're right up on a mountain and we get all the weather. It's mad. But it's all
catching all those clouds.
Yeah. Jeffrey, what's been going on?
I could do a. I'm glad you had a good week, and I'm glad you had a good week, Mareko. I had a less than enjoyable week. It was actually depressing, frankly. Like nothing terrible, but it was like, you know, it'll lead me into something I think would be interesting to talk about. Is, you know, we're doing all sorts of stuff outside of social media to try to kind of drum up business. Business has just like been. You know, we're trying to ramp up, and we just did a collaboration with Elon Hall. It went great, and I just brought over some. I'm doing a collaboration with this bakery that we're going to be working with, and he's just going to be buying knives directly from us, and then as he needs them, we'll make more. And it's really, we filmed some content for him. He does a really nice job locally, and We're working on another one tomorrow, and then I just did a prototype for another chef friend of mine who is really happy. So we're trying to think about all the stuff going on. Is a lot of, you know, there's a lot of ins and outs, and how do I keep us busy, and how do we weather certain storms, and being a leader, and how do you do that? And yeah. There's a lot of like learning stuff.
Is David with you full time now?
Pardon me? 4 days a week.
Oh, right.
And part of it's because I need to be ahead of him. You know, and I need to, part of it is the fact that number one is business is not as good, robust as I would like it to be, but I have to be ahead of him too. So it's like,
and so you can fart in the, because you've probably been holding in for 4 days. You need some room on your own,
right?
So you can just let out.
Yeah. But otherwise it's been great. And it's like, it's made me have to be more thinking forward. It's just, you know, it is stressful. I mean, I'm not complaining, but like being a small business owner is stressful. You know, there's four people on the payroll, including me, and then there's all sorts of bills to pay, and there's this, that, and the other thing. So when I get home at night, it's nonstop dealing with whatever. And, you know, we get to Friday, and next thing you know, it's like we're dealing with the stuff in our family. Like I went to visit my mother. My mother is diminishing. I've talked about it before. I actually have to start to kind of make some boundaries with the listeners, because apparently I'm giving too much. That's for another day. But sometimes I got to learn how to fucking control myself a little bit. But my mother's not, you know, she's diminishing, and every time we see her, she thinks I'm her brother, and there's a lot of like not understanding time and why she's there, but at the same time she's, you know, happy to be there, but it's emotionally like intense. And then my kid is finishing up college, and she's out in California, and we're talking a lot, and this is a very stressful time in her life, because this is the end of finals. But then, you know, if you're following along in regards to college campuses, especially out in California, the protests have been like, I don't want to say a distraction, but it's been very difficult for a lot of the students on the campus. And without saying too much, it's, you know, it's concerning, especially when you're across the country from your kid and you can't just kind of go. And, you know, what's been going on in Columbia has been unbelievable. The police get called in. UCLA is a disaster area too. And you just, you know, you can't really help your kid. So that's stressful. And then next thing you know, I'm, you know, dealing with all sorts of stuff on the weekend, and I'm sitting down to watch the Knicks game. And then I get, I'll be very delicate as one of our listeners decided to have an unpleasant interaction with me. And it really like brought everything down to like just how unnecessary certain things are. And it's become this issue where I'm happy to help people as often as I can. I try to guide people to Knife Talk. You know, if you have a question about something, go to Knife Talk, because then we can answer the question for other people too. You know, this is a great opportunity for us to answer questions that will help other people as well. And then I get stuff in my DMs, and if I'm not, you know, helpful enough, all of a sudden I'm an asshole. And, you know, if I'm too helpful, I love makers like you that give everything away. It's like, you can't win, you know? And it's like, I have a life as well. And I got depressed about everything. And then to the point where I recorded an episode of Full Blast, and the tone was just like, it was a good episode and I'll hold on to it for a bit. And I listened to it twice, and I thought, this is not the tone I want to give. So I'm not doing an episode of Full Blast this past week, and it was just, like, slightly depressing. But everything's fine. I'm fine. Everything's fine. My kid's okay. My wife's okay. She's dealing with shit, too. It's just, like, this is a kind of a stressful part in my life.
But look, don't beat yourself up about a listener, because you're not a public service.
I understand, but
99% of our listenership.
The crazy thing is you end up having these slight relationships, and then people overstep their bounds. And it's like on a Sunday afternoon, I'm getting like, you know, like I said, I'm not mad at this person, but at the same time, it was like super duper unnecessary. I'm trying to watch the fucking Knicks clinch a playoff berth. Another playoff berth, and I'm getting fucking. And the funny thing is my wife is just like, you know, finally she said, you know, I understand you need to be on your phone because you have to monitor the website, monitor sales, deal with, you know, trying to sell stuff and stuff like that. So it's hard for me to just kind of cut the phone off because, you know, there is a lot on the line in regards to me being out there. If I walk away for a month, they forget. So everything's fine. But what I thought was be interesting to talk about was, you know, we've been talking a lot about how social media has affected sales because of, you know, Section 230 and all the different things that Instagram's doing to prevent knife makers. But what is it that these people who are using social media, what is their responsibility? It seems as though that there's just a degree of people being entitled to success or something. And I was wondering what you guys thought about that, because it's like it's a two-way street. This isn't like a, you know, this is like a, now you're dancing by yourself. You know, you have a partner. You have a responsibility as well.
Go on, Marco. Okay.
Oh, I'll go. Yeah. I think, or at least I'll try to start. Yeah, I think all the various platforms, I mean, that's exactly what they are. They're a platform of sorts, kind of a stage in a way where you are given the opportunity to present yourself in how, whatever light you like and in whatever way you choose. But they don't have a responsibility to us, to anybody, whether we're knife makers or photographers or singers or whatever. They don't really have a responsibility to us. Because what ultimately why they build these platforms is they're trying to create advertisement space, and that their business is based around creating advertisement space and making revenue from advertisement, whether it's from the people that are actually using it or from outside of it. I think they like the idea that there's kind of a sense of community to a point, but at the same time, they don't have a responsibility to us. And so I think us as the users of the platform, we have to be creative. And it is, I think it is useless, really, more than anything. It's not benefiting the maker themselves or anybody else to point fingers and complain. You got to get creative. You got to do something to break the rut or get out of the rut or go somewhere else and do something else. Do fucking, like I said, like go to YouTube. If you can do YouTube videos, do YouTube videos. There are a lot of people that are killing it over there still.
I guess I made a slight, I don't think I wasn't clear enough. I was trying to say, yeah, I need a better mic. This is a fucking brand new mic, by the way. Talk about clear. What I mean is,
okay,
as business people or as knife makers or as citizens of the world, behaving in a certain way, what responsibility do we have as people in regards to how we interact with things or other people? Like, perfect example, people send me, I'm trying to do more day in the life videos on Instagram, just because I was hesitant to do it for a while, because when I did it, you know, I did it on serrations. Next thing you know, everybody's invented serrations, you know, and it's like figuring out different ways to do offset serrated. And half these motherfuckers never cook a day in their life. And I stopped doing it because I felt like I'm just doing this, and then it's just basically I'm just getting stolen from, ideas stolen from. And then I started to do them to kind of like tell our story as well. And I still get these, you know, a lot of people will get into my DMs and then they'll just assume that I'm going to tell them how to do things in a way, usually in a brusque manner. And I just wonder what is the relationship between... I feel like people are being taking for granted opportunities and behavior and relationships with other people and the opportunities of social media. Does that make sense?
Yeah, people expect.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
A lot,
yeah,
from you, because I think if you put yourself out there, and I think particularly in our case and particularly in your case, where you know you host this podcast, you host Full Blast, you're there giving information. So I think to some people, you're the guy who gives out the information. You're the one with the answers. So when they've got something that they the answer to, they'll come to you and they'll think that's perfectly fine, almost as if that's your job. Well, that's what you do, you know. But that's not what you do. That is just a side thing, but what you do.
At all hours of the night.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And any day of the week, right?
Any day of the week.
Yeah. But, you know, it's the how we live now, isn't it? Everything's always on.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's not a case of, you know, on a Thursday between 8 and 9.30 p.m., we record Knife Talk and then we turn off our computers until next week. You know, people are listening to this at any time of the week. And you're, we're the guys. We're the guys who answer people's questions. That's how we're known to some people.
Yeah, but they don't go to Knife Talk.
They go to you.
They go to fucking Fader Knives. And here's the funny thing. Here's the
can't
funny
help
thing.
You with that, mate.
I remember a number of years ago, I remember interacting with a person who's a friend of mine now. And I remember sending him a DM, not asking for anything, but just kind of touching base. And I could see that he read it, but didn't respond. And I remember my immediate reaction being like, well, that sucks. I mean, it's just like, you know, you could have just said hello. You said something. But then at the same time, I remember asking another knife maker, oh, what is your, you know, that's really cool finish. How is it? And the guy said to me, oh, that's a proprietary thing. I don't tell anybody. And I remember thinking to myself, oh, that's an asshole thing to do. But now it's just like I'm in this mix of like, I kind of want to do that too. I kind of want to fucking, you know, do that too. And the other thing is it crazy? It's usually the answers are usually very logical. And the questions are very much similar to, like, if you just did it a few times, you'd figure it out, you know? And it's just like, a part of me is just like, some of these, I can't, it's overwhelming to a certain degree. Maybe yeah. I'm just complaining.
No, I understand better what you're saying now. Sorry, I misunderstood.
No, it's okay. I wasn't clear enough.
I think boundaries, like you were saying at the beginning, do need to be better defined, and people need to hear us now. If you have a question, send it to the Knife Talk podcast so that everybody can benefit from the answer. And it also helps the show, right? But I think there we do strike up these conversations, and there a level of familiarity or friendliness is struck up, but ultimately, a lot of us are still strangers.
All of us.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
We've never met Craig before.
Exactly. No. I don't, this fucking frog right. wannabe
I
motherfucker
have never
over
AI.
Here.
Met Craig. I might not be real. I could be AI.
He's yeah. AI, no.
AI Craig.
Oh, I mean, like, a perfect example is, like, I'm getting ready to go and spend, like, a week and a half at Fingal's. Fingal and I have been talking through social media for years, and I've met him once, thankfully, last year. We ultimately still don't know each other very well. And then me and my family are basically going to go drop in on him and his life for a week and a half, which is a lot. And, but he's been very gracious and open to that. But I think like I said, for years, we've been building that up. Now, even if you've been talking to somebody through social media, for a couple of years or whatever, or no matter what the time, there's still a level of unfamiliarity there. But the amount of familiarity that is there, it does, I guess, kind of breed, I feel like it breeds kind of a sense of entitlement, like you're saying, because people can get kind of a false sense of closeness or kind of like either through listening to us, through the podcast or interacting with us, even at shows or through DMs. But there's still like the people I talk to and help and will sit there and fucking message for hours they're the people I actually really know the most. And part of the reason I started the Patreon was to be kind of a knife coach for people, because I was doing that outside of, or just like kind of like I would with my friends. But at the same time, it was requiring a lot of time from me to take the time to answer these myriad of questions at all times of the day, any day of the week. And it was me that wasn't, honestly, and like I wasn't doing a good job maintaining a good boundary. And so by starting that Patreon, that was a place where I could say, go here, ask the questions. The questions will help benefit everybody. We can really go deep because we'll do like a Q&A that will, you know, we could spend an hour and a half answering one fucking question. But the other people that will see it and listen to it will get the value from that. Obviously, you can't really do that here, but that's part of why I started that, because I was spending a ton of time doing that, and I was losing productivity in the shop. I was taking time away from when I would normally just be like chilling out and hanging out with my family. But again, that was kind of a me thing. I was not doing a good job maintaining those boundaries. And so by starting that Patreon, that was kind of a way for me to kind of not necessarily put up a wall, but just like create a boundary where it's like, okay, this stuff, those kind of things belong here, and not when I'm trying to run a business, and not when I'm trying to be with my family.
Hmm. It's interesting what you say about the overfamiliarity. I've occasionally jumped into the Knife Talk DMs and seen, you know, hey fuckers, you know, as people's sort of introduction to us.
Josh Scott, like... every time.
And I think a lot of that is because people listen to us, and they've maybe listened to years now, and, you know, they feel as if they know us. And that's great. I think that's what podcasts are great at doing, which is great. But yeah, sometimes maybe if you're not feeling the best, and you know, things getting on top of you, you can just be like, fuck you, who do you think you are, kind of thing, you know? Yeah.
Bro.
But we bring it on ourselves. I mean, we're not, you know, we're not formal here. We, you know, we call our listeners far worse quite often. You know?
No, we don't call them we just call them flea bags every so often.
I mean, I call them fuckers every once in a while.
Yeah,
but
yes, yeah.
I've been trying to have a sense of self-awareness and trying to compartmentalize and set boundaries. But I think also I think it's a two-way street, that there needs to be kind of a sense of self-awareness from outside of us as well, that there is kind of a lack of that true closeness. To expect, you know, in the middle of a fucking, on Sunday in the early evening, that you're going to get back to a question right away. Like, you do have a life. You have the right to have a life. You bust your fucking balls all goddamn week so you can sit down and enjoy a little downtime with your wife watching a fucking Knicks game. Like, you 100% deserve that.
Part of it's also, I feel like there's this, and we talk about this a lot, there's a strange behavior that people have, and it's like, there's a lack of understanding of your actions having consequences. And that's a global issue. People are doing things, and they're not looking at how is this going to come across. And I feel as though, and I, sometimes I'm guilty of it too. Sometimes people, it's hard to read, you know, if I say something stupid like get off my phone, which I say, I've been saying that comes from Imus, Don Imus. That comes from back in the day. People would call up Imus in the morning and they'd say something stupid. And he'd be like, hey, get off my phone. He'd hang up on him. And I've been saying get off my phone to my daughter. Like, that's the best thing in the world. My kid now says that to people. When they'll say something to her, get off my phone. You know, it apparently comes across very rude to people. I mean, it's just the way it is. So it's just like, you know, get off my phone. That's fine. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I was having a bad day, and I was having a bad week, and now things are getting better, and I'm glad Craig's back. And it just seems as though I don't know. I don't know what it is, especially with knife makers, because there's still a lot of talk of people stealing ideas and being influenced by people. And I've seen a lot more people who are, you know, upset that, you know, designs and ideas are taken. And there's like a lot of, there's a degree of like, you know, hurt feelings.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what we should do to rid you of this pain?
Go ahead.
A bit of role play. So you're sitting there watching the Knicks, right?
You know what? Perfect.
I'm the other side of the world. I pick up my phone.
Just let me just preface this by saying tonight is game six.
It starts
at 9 o'clock. So all my Alter Cocker friends, we're all going to fall asleep in our chairs before the third quarter starts. It's going to be so goddamn late. Okay,
so your phone, bing, it comes up.
Oh, Jesus Christ, who's this?
Hey, Jeff, you fucker. I really need to heat treat my knives.
Okay.
What would you recommend? Should I just do them in the oven? Should I do them in the microwave? What do you think? I'm doing no research. I'm a typical listener. I'm going to do no research. I expect an answer from you. Drop what you're doing. What's the answer?
I'm typing with my big fat thumbs. Hey, schmuck. get yourself an Even Heat. Stop playing. I mean, I can't get much better than that. Go to evenheat-kiln.com to find out what all the fuss is about. I just got off the phone with Spence not too long ago. They got a dedicated temper oven that's dynamite, and those boys are doing some great stuff over at Even Heat. So go to evenheat-kiln.com and get yourself one of the best in the world and stop playing.
Wait, a dedicated temper oven?
Yeah. Dedicated temper oven. It goes high, too. It goes all the way up to like 1,400 degrees or something like that.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, because, you know, that's a big problem people have is they're heat treating at this high temperatures, and then they all of a sudden they're just like, well, how come my oven's still at fucking 700 degrees?
Yeah.
Forever.
Right. Spence
said, I want to just tell real quick. Spence said to me, he's like, a guy calls up and he says, I tried to heat treat and temper, and then I hardened it, and it took my oven 2 days to get down, or 24 hours to get down to temperature. And he says, What are you talking about? Yeah, he was like a ridiculous amount. It wasn't 2 days. It was like a crazy amount of time. And he said, why did it take so long? He said, well, I had the door closed. And he said, well, that's the reason why. He said, put some bricks in there. You can run a fan in there. You're not going to hurt those coils. You can cool it down with, like, you know, compressed air. You can put some aluminum blocks in there, some fire bricks, stuff like that. Mm. He says, the guy was like, closed the door, just sat there and waited. Fucking waited from like 1900 degrees.
Brilliant.
Just like twiddling his thumbs.
Yeah.
Well, any day now.
I mean, I feel Mareko, like even
Mareko's
with mine...
on an artwork with his kids, right? Mareko's doing this artwork. He's all of a sudden his phone goes ding, ding. Hey, Mareko, you fucker. I need abrasives. Where should I get them? I'm going to do no research whatsoever. But I need you to tell me the answer now.
Listen. You got to go.
Listen. Yeah, listen, schmuck.
Listen. Do yourself a favor. Go to Combat. Get your order in. Make sure you put in Knife Talk 10. Save yourself 10%. CombatAbrasives.com. That's all you got to do. That's all you got to know. Just do it. Right? Did I do that right? Was
I
that
love
15?
This. I love this role playing. We should do this for the rest of the show.
We should. Shall we do some questions?
Yeah, we have good listener feedback too.
Okay, let's start with the question. Jeff, give us the first question.
All right, the first question comes from Forge Allard. How do you prepare your scales from small blocks of stabilized wood? So
listen, schmuck.
We just talked about how important it is to come here, that you're fucking right into, hey, schmuck. Let me tell you.
Preparing scales from small blocks of... So I'm assuming you haven't stabilized them yourself.
Let's just go with... I guess he has a block of stabilized wood.
Mm-hmm.
How do you prepare it to make it into scales?
Okay. So you need to split it first. If it's a block, table saw is probably your best bet. Use a fence and get a nice straight cut. I use a surface. What's it called?
Surface grinder attachment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. From the mighty Broadback Ironworks. We'll talk about them later. And I've got this little sort of clamp system, so I can use that with wood. And to flatten it. But I know, Jeff, you would use a disc grinder, I assume?
Yes, but, you know, Maritime Knife Supply has those scale flatteners that you're talking about. Okay. You have a little thing to hold. You know what?
Oh, yeah,
I mean,
you clamp
I'm amazed
it in
that...
and attach it to the surface grinder.
Right, it's like four pins, and then it puts it into the surface grinder, and then allows you to flatten your... I'm amazed how many people use a bandsaw to split their wood in half, because I feel as though, like, for me... I will get much straighter and cleaner cuts that I don't have as much preparation if I use a good table saw.
Mm.
But
very careful with the table saw, because obviously scales aren't the thickest. And they're very, very easy to get kickback because you're right up against that blade, you know?
Yeah, and I have two push sticks. One to hold it down on the top, and I actually made a knot. I basically took a 45-degree cut on a piece of wood, and then I allowed the blade to kind of go through it. So it's almost like four fingers, and it ends up holding all four pieces of the top and the side of the block. So when it goes through, it passes through the blade passes through the push stick. Right. It's actually pretty it's pretty cool. And then I'll have another blade. I'll have another push stick that's pushing not against the blade, because you know, what you don't want to do is you don't want to pinch the blade and then push the blade so then it tightens the other piece of wood up against the rail. But I just keep it so it's just keeping it like up against the edge of that blade. But yeah, I use a table saw sometimes depending on the wood or depending on the blade. I'll do a few passes, and then I always use a disc grinder. But sometimes the problem with flattening with a disc grinder is you unintentionally push it to one corner. So you just got to be real careful. And sometimes I'll push the platen out on the broadback Mareko platen, and then I'll just kind of use that. But I like the disc grinder a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything else on that Mareko?
Trying to think. No, I mean, I think I've only really used a bandsaw in the past myself. And yeah, I would just clean it up on the belt grinder, because that saw kerf from the bandsaw can be pretty rough. And then if I need it super duper flat, I would use a disc grinder, because I got one. But if I didn't have a disc grinder, I would just get a hold of a piece of like marble or something and just spray adhesive, some sand, like 220 sandpaper to it, and just pretend you're a DJ and rub it against the thing, scratching discs.
Hey, baby. Chicka, chicka, chicka. Hey, baby, rub it against the thing. I'm with you.
DJing that wood. And get it nice and flat, and then you'll be good there. But if you, so I guess a follow-up question, because we kind of almost got into asking this, was like how, like preparing wood blocks before. And I would say if you're going to cut down wood send wood blocks out to be stabilized, I would slightly oversize them, because I have definitely gotten wood back that has a little bit of funk and twisty whatever action going on. And you want to have a little bit of margin of error to be able to kind of true that block back up before either using it as a block after it's been stabilized or splitting it down in the handle scales afterward. Because if you're like really tight to what your normal starting block dimensions are going to be, you're going to find you're accidentally putting yourself in a tough spot because there's inevitably... It's very rare that there isn't kind of like a weird kind of weirdness that happens to the block after it's been stabilized. Because depending on, like, if you go to K&G, they'll if it's not dry enough, they'll dry it for you a little bit, and then they'll put it through the process. But usually there's heat involved, there's resins, there's all this, and drying and all this stuff. It's going to, weirdness, warpage is going to happen in the block. So building in a little bit of buffer room for yourself around that block before you even send it out is I think is really helpful.
The first time I ever did any kind of stabilizing, when I was doing knives with my old boss Charlie Palmer, and he wanted to use this wood wine barrels, and I processed the wine barrels to scales that would be about three, like just under half an inch, so like, you know, 9/16 or something like that. And
that's just over half an inch.
It's under half an inch. 7/16, I mean. 7/16. Sorry. You're right.
I'm just buzzing your balls.
You're right. You're right. Yes. 7/16 under it. And I know Craig's just like, what the fuck are these guys talking about?
16ths.
7/16ths.
Who came up with 16ths?
Yeah, are you crazy?
What's that, like 20 post-its? What sort of measuring system are you using?
It's 20 post-its, yeah.
Just about, actually.
Yeah. So I remember when I sent it out, and then I had them in scale size, like thickness, and they definitely put them up in there. I mean, they're in Arizona, so they put them up outside to dry, and that thing fucking twirled a little bit. And I had to afterwards, I definitely had enough that I could break it down a little bit, but I thought to myself, if I'm ever going to send scales out, I'm going to send them in blocks, and then I'm going to rip them down afterwards, and I'm going to make sure that I have it like at least an inch thick piece before I'm going to stabilize them, just because if I split them, I want to make sure that I can take care of the blade, and I know if I'm going to have a liner, there's going to be a liner in there. But that is a problem if you make them scale size and then send them out. There's a good chance you're going to lose some of that to what Mareko said to truing up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What I tend to do with scales as well is give them that final sort of blast when you're flattening and you're using your sandpaper, or whether you're using a surface grinder attachment. I generally go about 120, so it's not, you know, it's not, you don't want to polish them, the insides because you want that adhesive to really sort of key into it. So yeah, and I'd often put some, just use a countersink bit. And once you know your shape and you're down to a rough dimension, you then start putting some dimples in. So when you're using your epoxy, you just get these little cups, you know, that will, whether it helps or not, I don't know. But it'll certainly help for sort of weight reduction as well, I suppose. But you can get these little cups of epoxy then just helping to seal as well.
I you know what I use these days for epoxy, by the way? I used, David got me to get some Dixie cups. And it's so much better to mix them in the Dixie cups.
Like the little, like...
What's a Dixie cup?
It's like a little portion cup, right? Like 2 ounces?
It's like a little... It's like for, you know, you take a... You know, when you go to the doctor and you got to take a leak into something, and you got to give them
a leak. Right, oh, okay. Dixie cup. Yeah. Like that?
It's not a Dix... Not a cup for your dick. It's not for your dick. It's called
a,
you know...
a see-through
the company
cup.
Is Dixie see-through. Cups. It's
not... A Dixie cup.
It's a Dixie...
Do you wear that in public or?
Yeah, you know, it's not. Yeah, that's why it's a Dixie, as in like D-I-X-I-E. It's not like Dixie.
I wish I was in Dixie. Yeah.
Dixieland Delight.
Yeah.
This next one comes from an anonymous. I've been battling depression and anxiety in a real low point in my life, going through divorce, etc. I have zero ambition and desire to get into the shop, even though I know it makes me feel better, and it's what I love to do as a hobby. Any advice for getting the motivation back into the shop? My worry is pushing myself into the shop and forcing myself to do it as work will end up, and I will end up not liking it. And then he sent a message basically saying, I'm okay, everything's fine, you know, I'm doing better, he's in recovery, and he's feeling very like positive about things. And he says, you guys are one highlight of my week. Thank you. Keep it up.
Right. Okay.
Good dude, by the way. Good dude.
Okay. I suffer with this so much. Just that zero ambition sometimes, where there's a million things that I want to be doing. And sometimes I think this is something I don't want to be doing, you know? And it's always just a case of just starting. So pick something, whether it's just go in and tidy up your drill bits, you know, something small. Quite often that'll be it. You've done that, you don't even think, you're onto the next thing. Oh, you know, you're 2-3 hours in, you're just like, I'm loving this. I'm not saying that's going to happen every time, but just starting, picking something really super super simple, and quite often that, certainly for me, that can be enough to sort of spark an interest and just get my brain working in the right way, and I'm just like, okay, I'm into this now, and I'm loving it, you know. But yeah, that's all I've got, I'm afraid. Mareko, any tips for this?
Yeah, this is definitely something that I've been struggling with for years. And I've been working on, I don't think getting my head right is probably the right terms, because I think this is something I'll probably just struggle with my whole life. It's just a matter of how to frame it, and or when it's really hitting hard, which happens like every 3 to 4 months, where it's just like really hitting me hard and I'm feeling super low and depressed. I find small things, like Craig was saying, actually, when I get into the shop, I find that I just have to start with something small. But I do struggle with kind of like anxiety around doing something and making a mistake, and feeling like there's going to be another, you know, letdown or a loss or something else to pile on to me, the pile of shit that I already got going. But I've had to reframe it for myself, because it's gotten to the point where the anxiety of making a mistake, and kind of like I've talked about struggling with like perfectionism to a point, keeps me from fucking, sometimes it feels like, doing anything in the shop. And I was actually talking with Don Nguyen about this when I was down visiting him, because he has these days as well. And I think people would be surprised to find that probably a lot of us struggle with this. But I was telling him that I had to reframe the fear of making a mistake, because intellectually in my head, I'm like, I know mistakes aren't the end of the fucking world. A mistake is an opportunity to learn something new. either how to fix the mistake or figure out a new process to help avoid the potential of making that same mistake in the future. But a mistake only stays a mistake if you don't learn from it. And so I've now started to reframe it. Instead of thinking like, as much as I plan things out and write down all these notes about the order of operations, everything I got to do step by step by step by step, even though I think I'm going to plan these things out, everything's going to go smooth. I got to know that a mistake is going to happen in there somewhere and be confident in myself and my ability to either know how to fix the mistake because it's something I've done in the past, or learn from the mistake so that I am adding that knowledge now to my tool belt of skills, and so that I can move forward in a positive way and also keep me from kind of battling with this, almost kind of crippling like anxiety to even approach doing anything. But what Craig was saying was super smart. Even if it's just fucking starting by sweeping the floor, the way my brain works with the ADHD is that like I sidetrack and side mission all over the fucking place. But it's a simple, easy place to start that could eventually lead to me doing something more productive, and ideally does lead me to that place where I'm then better in a better headspace to do something more productive by starting with something simple as just tidying up and doing a little sweeping in the shop, and yeah. But it's a real thing. For me, meditation practice has been really helped. I've been practicing meditation since almost 10 years now. I started back in 2015, 2016. And it has been a major helper for me in just like kind of not necessarily quieting my mind, because that's basically impossible, but just like being able to relax my brain in a way so that I'm just like, Not constantly having this swirling pool of terrible thoughts and anxiety and overthinking about so many different things, so that I can just kind of like give my brain a break. I started with Headspace, but I found a lot of great resources over the years for meditating, and Tara Brock's another really good one. And a lot of these people you can find like meditation practices online through YouTube. I read a great book called Self-Compassion that helped me kind of confront my issues with my inner self-critic that's been a really good book. And I've reread that probably like 3 times now. And it's a good book for me, honestly, to check back into like every 6 months or so, because I have a tendency, because it's a new practice for me to be basically nice to myself. That I have to check back in and remind myself how all that works every once in a while. Talk therapy has been helpful as well. And I know that it's for a lot of people, like there might be some baggage around all this shit around meditating, around therapy, around potentially seeking out some sort of medical or like medication or as an intervention of sorts. And what's interesting and cool is like in the last, I don't know how long they've been doing this, but part of the issue with some of the depression and antidepressant medications is that they take such a long fucking time. Like they just start you on one for a long time. They would just start you on one and you'd have to take it for like 3 weeks to even build up to a point where it's like it potentially starts to work, and then you have to sit on it for 3 weeks to see how that messes, like how it's working, if it's messing with you, if it's positive for you. And then if it's not working for you, then you have to take another 3 weeks to peter off it. You can't just stop it cold turkey. It'll really fuck you up. And so but nowadays they have DNA testing. They can test your DNA based on your DNA, the information from your DNA will point to which, because there are tons of SSRIs out there, or antidepressants, or anxiety, like medications to help with anxiety. All they have a way of testing so that they can more accurately target which of these medication interventions will help you best versus just blindly shooting from the hip. So that's also something to know and to keep in mind if this is something you want to pursue as a way to just like help to figure out like getting active and proactive in your own life, because I 100% am right there struggling with it like every day, honestly.
Well, I mean, that's part, I mean, that's every day is usually how it is. I mean,
yeah.
I you know, when my dad died a number of years ago, I remember taking off work, and then, you know, I think it was a day and a half. I took a couple days between he died and then the funeral. And I remembered, and my boss said, "Why don't you take some time off?" And I was just like, "I need to get back to work." And I went back to work like a day after he died, and then I worked until the funeral, and then went back to work. And I found myself being far more able to deal day-to-day stuff by just kind of the action of kind of getting back to it. And I'm not saying burying my feelings in the work, but I was very like, I felt that the work was a positive way for me to kind of like, you know, and you're there with your thoughts on that. I also think that exercise is beyond underrated. Oh, yeah. Yeah. When we started exercising really hard, regularly, is because we had dogs, and the dogs, you got to get walked. So we noticed that the longer the walks were, the less like maniacs they were at night. And, you know, all of a sudden it's like at night it's fucking terror if I give them a long walk. So I would give them long walks in the morning. And I started to find myself becoming very, very like relaxed, and then really get great ideas during the walk. And then I became incredibly focused, and that walk became meditative for me, in the sense of like, I was walking with the dogs. I wasn't listening to anything. I was thinking about what I was going to do in the shop. And then I felt like it was this great opening. It was like a warm up to the day. Exercise to me has been an incredible, important part of feeling positive about myself. Mm-hmm. And every day, my wife and I are now doing this new weight training thing, and she's getting yoked, and I'm barely move my goddamn arms. But at the same time, it's like, you feel really good about yourself afterwards. I highly suggest, I think that a lot of our listeners don't do as much exercise. And it doesn't have to be like, you don't have to run a marathon, like half an hour of exercise a day, especially in the morning. It's going to fucking spike up that adrenaline and that spike up those good mood enhancers, and you're going to feel good. And then maybe you'll have a great idea along the way. Maybe you'll come up with this new idea. Hey, you know, I was going for a walk and I had this great idea, and I didn't tell you guys, I'm starting a new business. I'm starting the coffee scoop business. Did I tell you about that? This is a new business I'm going to start. I'm the first one to ever do it, and I am going to break into the coffee scoop business. I'm so excited. I shouldn't have even said this, because everyone's going to steal this idea. I'm going to make these little things. I'm going to get them laser cut. You're going to be able to buy them off my website, and you're going to make your own coffee scoops.
There we go.
That's a joke.
You're throwing people off your trail. That's what you're doing.
That's a joke. I was. If you listen to the new Work For podcast, Brian's been doing coffee scoops, and everyone. It seems like people stealing other ideas from people is like the new in thing to do. So
creativity is hard, dude.
You know what? It isn't that hard. I think that
some,
you know,
people, it's really fucking hard.
Well, if you
are
do
a creative
one
person, you can't say that.
I'm not that. I mean, I think that, be honest with you, I think that creativity is also can be. You can make it scientific. You can do a slight evolution every single time. Yeah. You know, the beginning of this goddamn podcast when we first started, I thought I need something that's going to get people fired up. So I said, knife making is an art. And the reason why is because I was really wanted to say was knife making isn't sculpture. And I never even made the point that art is, you know, I never even said there's good art and bad art. I just fucking, you know, whatever. So the thing about making sculpture is you take an idea and then you make evolutions off of it. And then you just kind of like go down a pathway from where you first came. You just like, you have a main trail, and then you take branches off the main trail, and then you have these little streams of ideas. And then all of a sudden creativity comes from that. So I think that everybody is creative, and you can make it a little bit more, you know, your own. That's it.
I agree. I think everybody is creative, and it takes many different forms, though. It can be creative problem solving exists in many different forms, not necessarily like through artistic media like that we're typically working in, or people are, or artists are normally working through. But yeah, I just want to agree with you about exercise. That is 100%. And lots of studies have shown how big of an impact it has just on your mental state. It's massive. And I think it's as like you were saying, as little as even just 30 minutes of walking a day.
Walking's perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We humans are designed to walk. We are walking fucking machines.
What?
Yeah, bipedalism. It's amazing. But anyways, hey, 30 minutes a day.
Larry Glitter over there. Bipedalism. What he went arrested for, Craig? Bipedalism?
Yeah, something like that. But yeah, I mean, I think what we're trying to say is that, yeah, being creative can bring, other sort of pressures and stuff as well. But, you know, there is... things out there, they don't work for everybody. Everybody's slightly different, but on the whole, exercise seems to do well for people. And I think reframing things as well. I mean, I got a bit of an example. So my daughters, they get very down if they can't do something. They're like, I've tried and I can't do it. So they always say, I can't do it. And we're like, so my wife came up with this idea, say, no, we don't say we can't do it. You say, I'm not very good at it yet. And that's what they say now. And it totally changed their mindset now, you know?
Sure.
And that means that they're sort of like they're learning the piano at the moment. And at first, just, I can't do it. And they'd get in a strop and they'd walk away. But now they just say, oh, I'm not very good at it yet. And that makes them want to do it more, you know? So there's, you know, little sort of hacks and stuff. And I know, you know, who are we to tell anybody? Because, you know, we're not formally trained or anything.
We are the number one knife-related podcast on this German festival planet.
We certainly are. But yeah, there are these little, and you know, I hate the word hacks, but they are these little things that could maybe spring little sort of little things back into your life that can really get things going again, you know?
And shout out to Anonymous for being positive and trying to figure out ways in which to make his life better. That's harder than just, I'm not feeling very motivated. And the fact that you're getting your life together over some things, tragedies has happened in your life and you're trying to do it in a positive manner. Shout out to you, dude. That's harder than, you know, figuring out what the hell you're going to do in the shop. I mean, Jesus Christ, you're trying to get your life together.
Recognizing an issue as well, you know, before it gets way out of hand.
Jesus Christ.
But anyway, we could go on all night, but before we get into some listener feedback, I need to tell everybody about maritimeknifesupply.com. Lawrence is a good dude. He's got everything you could possibly need. He's the Canadian distributor for combat abrasives. They sell Rhino-Wet, Rhino-Stick. Anything we mention on the show, he sells it. Always got deals on belts, so if you buy 10, you get 10% off and all that kind of stuff. No code needed. Just go to the website. It's all there. They're the one-stop shop for knife makers, steel belts, handle materials, tools, forges, kilns, and more. Go take a look at maritimeknifesupply.com or Maritime Knife Supply on Instagram. Go and do it.
He also has the all the steel for the Dana steel.
He does. He does. So, yes, if you are new to the show, every year we do a Dharma Steel Chef Invitational show, which is a Dharma Steel event where we do a build-along. So... Lawrence at Maritime Knife Supply, he's supplying the steel. So Dharma Steel have made a special billet of steel. So we'd all use exactly the same billet, the same dimensions, the same materials. And the idea is that we make something cool, really, and we can put it in to be judged at the competition. If you've never used Dharma Steel before, it is a stainless Damascus-style steel. Super, super, super easy to use. And they got beautiful, beautiful patterns too. So go take a look at dharmasteel.se or their dharmasteelab on Instagram. But get involved with the build along. I'm not sure how many pieces are left. I know last year we sold out more than once. But head on over to maritimeknifesupply.com to get your piece of Dharma Steel.
Yeah, and, it's probably a few stragglers left, I'm sure. But yeah, might as well ask.
Yeah. And if you're loving using the Dharma Steel, you can get more. Head to dharmasteel.se and use Knife Talk to get 10% off further order.
Before we move on to feedback, can I just say one more thing about the previous question around depression?
Yes, go ahead.
I think it's massive, and I think one of you guys actually already kind of said this, but massive that you're talking about it, and I think identifying it is huge. But I think one of the big reasons I've tried to share about my experience in this shit is that the hardest part about it is feeling alone. Right? Because it's easy to feel like I'm the only one experiencing this shit. Nobody else experiences it. Now, obviously, like, intellectually, you can know that's not true, but at the same time, the way it feels inside doesn't feel like that. And so finding a group to talk to about this, or even just one other person, is massive. It makes a big difference, because the reality is you're definitely not alone in these feelings of anxiety, depression, whatever you got going on. It is a struggle that a lot are working through. And so finding people to talk to and knowing that you're not alone really makes a big difference in managing it, for sure.
Don't be a bipedalist like Gary Glitter.
Who the fuck is Gary Glitter? What the fuck does that even mean?
Who is Gary Glitter?
Oh, that's...
Ta-da! Ta-da! Oh, my God.
That?
Who's Gary Glitter? That's a show in itself. One of Britain's favorite pedophiles. Moving on. Okay, we got listener.
Kids.
Oh, right. Don't look him up. There's no need. Listener feedback.
You know what? I use that song. That particular song. I think I don't remember the name of it. It's such a huge anthem in the United States, and sports events.
Yeah.
That I used it. For the last time I was at Maker Camp, I think, or the year before that, and somebody says, "I can't believe you're using that Gary Glitter song. He's such a pedophile." And I'm just like, I mean, it's a good ass song. It's not like built on the backs of so and so. All right, so this is a Knife Talk listener feedback. I didn't mean to make light of what you were saying, Mareko, but
or pedophiles.
Little joke here and there is okay.
Yeah.
All this. All right. So, guys, go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. That's where you can DM us your questions for the show or your listener feedback. This listener feedback comes from our friend Morris Knifeworks. Morris Knifeworks says, "Hey, guys, I just want to say hey and thanks for the great podcast. I'm just a part-time maker who loves making knives with no intent to go full-time. I lose more money than I make for knife sales. But, you know, fuck it. I don't care. My hobby is listening to you guys."
That's the attitude. Wow.
That's right, baby. Fuck it. I don't care. Dude, Morris Knifeworks is a listener feedback question, star question, I think.
I think so.
My hobby is listening to you guys carry on while I'm hand sanding, grinding, sharpening, swearing because I screwed something up, or relaxing with a smooth whiskey. Stay loose. Keep up the great podcast for all of us part-time hobbyists. Don't give a fuck. Small guys out here, and we've learned a lot. And go Combat Abrasives, dude. Let's do like the golf clap for Morris.
That was
a pretty
good one.
I mean, he even threw in a plug. That is the best listener feedback we've heard in a long time. He don't give a fuck.
Doesn't give a fuck. Yeah, nice.
Like when you say it better. Doesn't give a fuck. All right. We were talking about credit card companies. Oh, I had another conversation with my wife last night. We were talking on this podcast about this credit card company that's like doing these ads about the woman is basically saying, you know, I don't like something I just bought, so I'm going to call the credit card company and have them do the chargeback. Paul Jansen says, fun fact about credit card companies, when they say you never have to pay for any fraudulent purchase, it's because the company purchases it's because the company the purchases were made from have to eat the cost, not the person who made the fraudulent charges. A local gas station here would routinely have $10,000 to $20,000 they had to eat because people would dispute their charges.
Dispute the gas? It wasn't good gas. What?
I know the charges.
It broke
well,
my
that's
car.
That's our phone. Our Instagram. Our credit cards got hacked because I used a. The credit card company believed because I went to the gas station pump and that somebody lifted, you know, they put like a little, you know, fucking, who knows, Scooby-Doo bullshit in the credit card finder. And next thing you know, they that's how they get your card. And then that's probably one of the reasons why they're blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Philly Knife Co. says, I had to pause the show to send thanks to Mareko for calling out all the makers putting blame on Meta/IG/social media. Treat your business like a business and use every avenue available. X, Facebook, Google Business, IG, cans on a string. If you're not doing everything in your power to promote and sell, no one cares about your IG boo-boos and they're not providing Band-Aids. Love the show, Nathan. Philly Knife Co.
Thanks.
I tell you what. I'm getting every time I deal with someone who is I do any type of collaboration, any type of something other than, and I still have the orange dot saying I can't be recommended. My non-viewer engagement goes through the roof when I deal with somebody else who's promoting, helping promote, and helping promote mean just sharing stories. Right. Like and it's not necessarily going to be knife makers to knife makers. You got to get outside of. You kind of have to get outside of this organ, this group, because it's like. It's like, what is it? Incestuous, you know. Mm. If you start to get outside of someone's viewership, you're going to see that if you have the ability to see your metrics, you're going to notice that you have more viewers who are non-followers, and that's what you're going for. So
that's a really good point. Yeah, yeah.
It's still working. I mean, I'm shocked. I had I'm doing something with Christian Petroni. Every time you post something, I'm like. Getting fucking keel hauled by non viewers. Mm. So good job, Mareko.
Well, I think good job. We're all kind of saying the same thing.
Yeah, but he only thanked you.
Yeah. So Nathan, come on, man. We're all talking about Philly, it. We're all saying it.
Shout out to Philly. But I'm telling you now, Knicks and six.
I was going to say, how are those 76ers are doing pretty good.
Well,
right?
This is the first round. And this has been amazing because on Tuesday was game five and the Knicks were in the Garden. They were up 3-1. This was the game to win. And they had all the old guard Knicks there. It seemed as though it was like it was in the bag and they lost in overtime. And so they're now going back to Philadelphia tonight. But the fucking game doesn't start till 9 o'clock at night. So we're all like, so I'm going to be up till midnight tonight watching this goddamn sport.
That's such a late game.
Well, it's because it's a national. It's so stupid. And all these kids.
Oh, because they're trying to broadcast it live to the West Coast, too?
It's live to the West Coast, too. Yeah. Huh. But it's like, they don't give a fuck because the Lakers are gone. Like, fuck the West Coast. Philly, you know what? I'm against Philly in this situation, except for we're all East Coasters here.
Right.
And it's like, in terms of these two teams, it's like, why do we have to wait till fucking 9 o'clock? And I had a friend of mine who's like, I'm getting tickets to the Philly game, the 76ers game. You want to come with me? And I'm like, the tip-off is 9 p.m. Like, we're going to get home to fucking 5 o'clock in the morning. He's like, oh, I'm not doing that. I'm like, all right, there you go. Shout out to the 76ers. It was nice knowing you. I will regret that. Okay, this one comes from Chris Dobbs. Chris Dobbs says, Craig was saying he was playing a show at his kid's school last minute. Well, I have a story. I was asked to write a song for a family member's wedding for when they had to walk down the aisle. I wrote it and played it with my dad and everything, and it went great. Around 10 years later, her father died, and with 3 days to relearn the song, they wanted me and my dad to play it at the funeral in front of a couple hundred family members. Oh, wow. I felt it was the least I could do, but I don't know if I ever had higher anxiety than thinking how I could fuck up and it wouldn't be burned in the memory of everyone that I ruined the funeral. I'd give it a 0 out of 10, would not recommend.
No. Jeez, that's a hell of a lot of pressure, isn't it? Jeez.
Well, I mean, ruining a funeral is—that's a fucking tall ass order. No one's there for a good time, you know. Just because FUN is the first three letters doesn't mean you're supposed to fucking, you know, put on a fucking show, you know, Chris. I used to say that to my dad. My dad and I ended up going to so many funerals with my dad, and I would just always in the middle of it, I would just turn to him like, "We put the FUN in funeral," and he would always laugh, and it was very funny. Mike Nye says, I'm watching Rambo First Blood Part 2, and I'm sure Jeff enjoyed it as a teenager. The torture scene where the Russians heat up his knife and threaten to put it out in the American POW. What are you doing, Mike? Put it in the American POW's eye. All I can think is thanks to Knife Talk Podcast by saying, oh shit, they just ruined the temper of that knife. You're all ruining my childhood. Yeah,
brilliant.
You know, it's like
it's now a butter knife.
Yeah, it's like I rewatched Raiders of the Lost Ark not too long ago, and there's the scene where they're holding the in the beginning where the Nazis come into that bar and the snow's coming in, and they're holding down Indiana Jones' love interest, and they're gonna torture her. And then he takes this hot iron out of the fire, and he's holding the poker up, and he's like coming closer and closer. And all I can think of is, man, he's got some good heat right there. And I said, it's lasting a long time. I said, there's no way that piece of fucking steel would be that bright and that long for so long. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. 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 Yeah.
I have a couple more if you want to keep going with this. J.D. Eiler says, just trying to add value. Don't come at me for trying to help. For preventing warp on AEBL, clamp several blades together before cryo and leave them clamped together until temper. I used a piece of 1-inch angle iron and add clamps as needed to make sure the full length of the blades are clamped down. Absolutely foolproof to keep them straight. Cheers. It only is good if you have a doer. You have to make sure that it'll fit in the doer. That's number one with liquid nitrogen. That's a cryo issue. I made a knife once, and then as soon as I was putting it into the fucking doer, it wouldn't fit, so I had to like grind off like a 16th of an inch just to get it in the goddamn doer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, no, the liquid nitrogen is great, but it is not meant for, like, cleavers and shit, unless you have, like, something to pour it in. Okay. So whatever you guys want
to
do.
Let's go back to a couple of questions.
Okay.
And then maybe we'll fuck off. Silas Cole says, hey, guys, I got a question. When making twist pattern steel, is there a reason why people don't round the billet off before twisting? Most people seem to square the bar and either grind or forge weld the folds, thanks to Jarl. One for you, I think, Mareko.
Okay. So, wait, his first question is why people don't round the billets?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Right. Okay, so what happens when you shove those corners in is it changes the cross-sectional appearance of that pattern. And so I think it ultimately really depends on the aesthetic that you're trying to accomplish in your twist pattern. Sometimes you want to keep those corners out. Sometimes you don't. If you're just doing kind of like basic twists, nothing crazy, and you're wanting to conserve material, then yeah, why not knock in the corners, at least forge it to an octagon rather than a square. That'll help you conserve material. But sometimes, like I said, sometimes you want some of, because what happens is when you twist, those corners, they don't stay sharp. Obviously, as you twist around, it becomes a round bar. But you do lose some of the pattern out into those corners. And then when you clean it up, either by grinding or whatever you're doing to clean up the outside of the billet before then either stacking up multi-bars, or if it's a large twist that you can then forge into a blade, you're accomplishing different things, I guess. And so it really comes down to what you're trying to achieve pattern wise. Now, whether or not people are actually really taking that in consideration is a different question, but it is something that you should think about if you're trying to do a twist. If you want to keep those corners or if not, and the best way to try to figure out that is there are actually online like web apps, or there's also, I think there's called the Thor 2 program, which it only runs on PCs. But there it's an app that's designed to predict what a twist will look like. And so you can draw, like have a little square in your notebook or whatever, or even just use a fucking post-it note, draw a pattern on there of what you think it's going to look like. And then keep one square and draw the pattern on there, and then knock the corners off the next one, or act like you kind of forged the corners in and draw an octagon and see how that affects the pattern. It's on certain and simple straight layers, it's not going to really change the pattern too much. But if you have W's in there, if you have alternating, like a couple different pattern billets coming together that's going to go into the twist bar, that will definitely play a role. If it's a four-way that you then twist, that's going to change if you keep the corners or not. So those are all things to take in consideration when you're doing twisting, or is what that's going to end up looking like kind of in the finished product. Yeah.
Cool.
Simple, right? Okay. Just like that.
Anything to add, Jeff?
Nothing. Other than the only time I did a twist, that's when I was doing a class with Aaron Wilburn, all I could think of is how many inclusions am I going to get because of this twist?
Right. Like,
is it all these little places for shit to fall into, or like something bad to happen? I'm always was convinced that there would be inclusions.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and there are. This is, so when you have, even when you forge it rectangular, you're still, or sorry, not rectangular, from a square to an octagon, you're still going to have kind of those ridges because the octagon has corners. Honestly, even when you forge round, like Damasteel, for example, when they're processing their material, they forge it round and then they twist it. And so it's staying round, but it still creates just the slight little irregularities. It still creates kind of like these ridges. And so that's something that you have to account for, that either it gets cleaned off afterwards or that you somehow are carefully incorporating and forging down. But the best bet is probably to clean those out, because if you retain those ridges and those fissures in between, those become propagation points where the material can start to crack or come apart, as you're then drawing it, either spreading it widthwise or drawing out lengthwise, and those could become serious problems down the road.
I really, really wanted to finish this. I had Gary Glitter Rock and Roll queued up.
Jesus, drop it!
But I
drop,
was, but I,
drop the here, glitter.
I wasn't going to, because I thought they'd kick us off the podcast. I thought we'd get some sort of like violation for playing it, but it would have been good to kind of like have it going. It would have been good.
I don't even know what song that is. You're singing.
Come on. You want to be in my gang. I'm not singing fucking Gary Glitter. What am I doing?
That's fucking terrible.
Yes, it is terrible.
It does not sound like a good song.
No. Oh, this one, it's got the really cool guitar riff.
Oh, it's him? That's him? You could have said, like, the theme music from Happy Gilmore.
Is it really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they use that in Happy Gilmore quite a bit.
Yeah.
All right, I don't want this to get in trouble.
Yeah, that'll do. I think we're in trouble already. Yeah.
For okay. All those bipedal listeners.
Jesus Christ. Dan Watson Knife. Dan Watson Knives. He's contacted us via Instagram. We are Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. So if you've got a question to what Dan did, and Dan's from Queensland in Australia. G'day again from the land where it never seems to stop raining. We've just had about the rainiest year. You know, get to the question, Dan. Jeez. We've had the rainiest year on record with over 30 days in a row of at least a few hours of rain. Okay. Truth, Dan. Do you guys have any tips or tricks for keeping finished carbon steel knives from tarnishing in an eternally damp environment, despite being kept in a box? After a few weeks, the humidity always finds a way to do shit all over my work. Thanks, Dan. Carbon steel knives. How do you keep them from tarnishing over time? Anybody?
Give it a whirl, Mareko.
Yeah, I do. I probably do the most carbon steel stuff. When I have blades laying around the shop, if I know they're going to be laying there for a while, I try to hit it with some. Well, I would hit it with Johnson's Paste Wax, but you can't buy that anymore. But I will say that I found a really great alternative to Johnson's Paste Wax. It comes from a company called Real Milk Paint. And they make a clear carnauba wax. So it's a combination of carnauba wax, which is like a really hard, durable wax, with like some solvents, just so that you can spread it around and whatever, and you can rub it onto the surface of whatever you're trying to preserve. But then later on down the road, I come back to it, and it is shocking how rust-free it is. There might be a small spot here and there, but otherwise, the blades stay pretty well protected. Otherwise, like, I really don't know. Like, you could let them sit in a bath of oil, and if you're not going to come back to them for a while, and then you know, if it's something simple, like even if it's just vegetable oil, that'll help. And then I think
it's gonna go rancid.
The vegetable oil, you're not fucking eating it.
I know, but it's still gonna go rancid. That happened to me. I had a guy who used olive oil.
How does that affect the steel, though?
Because if it goes rancid, then it oxidizes.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, never mind then. It's use okay. a nicer oil. Use some motor oil.
You had
then.
The first one. You had like the milk-fed butter oil or whatever you were using.
real milk paint.
Oh, whatever.
Yeah.
Get that fucking real milk. Just use some real milk.
Just put it in some milk. No, but yeah, waxing them, oiling them somehow, putting them, like, fucking whatever. Put it in, like, get a food saver and vacuum pack the bitches for all I care. You could do, like, there's all kinds of things you could do.
It's quite an aggressive answer.
Yeah.
I'll edit your shit. I'll edit it just so you say that. Let me move on.
I mean, but yeah, if you just leave them around exposed, of course they're going to get.
You muted yourself.
You muted yourself, Mareko.
Mareko, you muted yourself. Yeah.
Oh,
you started cursing. You just started cursing at poor Dan.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, Dan. Beep, 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 beep.
No, just you got to do something. You can't just let them lay around. I don't know what else to tell you.
Vacuum pack the bitches for all you care.
Yeah, exactly. Get some oil on some paper towels. Wrap the blades up in that. Put them in a Ziploc bag.
Careful with the paper towels. I've had problems with AEBL where I've wrapped steel, AEBL steel up in a paper towel and then electric tape. And it was humid, and I guess the paper towel must have absorbed some of the humidity.
Sure.
And then the AEBL rusted a little bit. I stayed clear of paper towel for a long term.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's why I was saying you, like, get it oily. Some sort of preservative oil of some sort, whether it's motor oil or whatever, and put them in a bag and then store them somewhere.
Yeah. I've got some carbon steel blanks, which I've moved house with twice. From years ago, and they're fine. So I just use a cheap furniture wax and use like a wax paper and just wrap them around an elastic band, and they've been absolutely fine.
A couple interesting things is that I get really worried about leaving blue painter's tape on steel for a long period of time because I do feel like something happens sometimes and then the adhesive does something and it interacts with the air and I have to end up refixing things. So I don't like to leave things wrapped up in tape over, you know, the weekend. Like I get real, especially like if we're finishing a carbon steel knife, I'll make sure that we oil it, then wrap it up with paper and because I don't want to have to do any refinishing. And I've noticed that with AEBL sometimes if the paper towel has a little bit of moisture in it, it can rust the AEBL.
I got a tip there for you.
I bet you do. Go ahead.
You're gonna need to refinish. You're gonna need to refinish. And you know what? If you use RhinoWet, it's gonna save you time. It's gonna save you money. RhinoWet is the sandpaper that everybody uses. If you're not using it, you're missing out. Every grade you could possibly think of, from the really rough stuff right up to sort of 3,000 grit. They've got it all. TexasFireSupply.com. They stock Indasa RhinoWet. So yeah, you've got no excuses if you aren't using it. As well as Indasa RhinoWet, TexasFireSupply.com has everything you need to make knives. Whether you're a farrier, a blacksmith, a knife maker, if you're pushing metal, TexasFireSupply.com is the place to go. And we can save you money. Use Knife Talk 10 to save 10% on your entire order. So go on over at TexasFireSupply.com.
Next ad read, just throw it to me. I got you. I'm gonna do something. I was gonna do something while you're doing it, but I ain't gonna do it.
Do you guys think like a small dehumidifier would help? Probably with like wood storage as well as steel.
Ah, I've got a tip for wood storage.
Let's go.
I've got lots of tips.
Yeah, you do. One little one.
Like a man with three dicks.
Gary Glitter.
So I've got an old fridge that I use, I don't just use it for wood. I use it to store my epoxies in as well. So basically, I've got a temperature control fridge. So you can buy a really cheap greenhouse ceramic heater. It's like a little tube. Take very, very, very little electricity it takes. There's one of them in there. And basically, that's on a thermostat. And it'll just think of it as a little even heat. But, you know, you'll have your temperature set at... You know, I mine's set to 21, 22 degrees C. I'm not quite sure what that is in American language. but yeah, it just keeps things
steady. It's Americanese.
at a steady temperature. And I've got a shelf on there specifically for my epoxies and stuff as well. It's very important you keep epoxies at a stable temperature. But yeah, I also keep my wood in there, and I've had some wood in there for years now.
Wow.
Cost literally pennies a week to run.
That's your even cool, right?
That's my even cool. Yeah. So you get an old fridge, it doesn't even need to have the fridge working. So get an old fridge that doesn't work anymore. And just get one of these tiny little ceramic heaters on a thermostat, and you'll be gold.
22 Celsius is 71.6 Fahrenheit.
Balmy. It's balmy over here.
Mm. All right. I what I do now is when I'm storing like the kind of all the carbon steel, I will give them a coat of T4 Sentinel oil from Trojan Horse Forge. They have it at Maritime Knife Supply. And rub it up with that, and then I'll put it away. And then I've been getting these like faux leather bags or leather bags, you know, for presentation for knife stuff. Well, I mean, you know, when you some of them are expensive. Some of the knives are expensive, and you just want. I mean, I don't put Kydex on the stuff that's got like etching and stuff like that because there is a little scuffing I don't want to deal with.
Okay.
And then they always come with a desiccant, that little thing that says "Do not eat" because we're so stupid. You know, they'll fucking they do not eat. Like you order, you get a bag of pepperoni, and there's a little fucking thing say, "Don't eat this." I'm like, of course, it's a fucking desiccant, asshole. I keep those. I don't keep the pepperoni ones, but I do keep the desiccants, and that helps. But I usually will oil something up, or I'll do the Neil Camamora move, his YouTube video on how he finishes, and I'll use some food safe wax. And then I'll coat a slick of that wax on, and then I'll kind of store everything away. But I've been using the T4 Sentinel oil a lot. I really like it. Definitely for that. But what I was going to say. Yeah, I mean, shit goes south. Yeah, AEBL also, P.S., it's just because it's stainless. So that's just words. Because you can make fucking
it's
AEBL
It's not stain
rust.
Impervious. It stains
you
less.
You can make AEL rust so fast it'll make your head spin. Doesn't take long. You just can't, you know. But yeah, those happens. So there you go.
Cool. Okay. Well, tell us about your grinder, Jeff.
Well, let me tell you about the grinder, everybody. Guys, I want you to go to BroadbandIronworks.com. You know why? Because you're going to get yourself the best grinder on the market. I'm telling you. You go to BroadbandIronworks.com for that 2x72 grinder, and you put in the promo code KNIFETALK10 for 10% off all the products, all the packages, the Max, the Premium, the Mega. You get all the service belt grinder attachments. You get the Moreco Platin. You get the contact wheels. Whatever you need, baby. You go to BroadbandIronworks.com, put in the promo code KNIFETALK10 for 10% off. Okay? All right, baby.
This product is not endorsed by Gary Glitter.
Hey!
All right, that's it. Here we go.
Okay, I think we can call it a day, do you think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah!
Thank
yeah.
you all for listening. We shall be back again next week without fail. Thank you again. Bye for now.
That's funny.
There we go. There's some sort of end music.
When you're not here, we go.
It was a good show last week, by the way.
We missed you. Oh, you are very funny, by the way. You broke in and say, "I am fine, not just a," you know. But the funny thing is you didn't listen to the whole thing because you would have said,
"No, I didn't."
You should have named it "Ode to Farts." That's how I was like double. I double knew you were. But yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. Right, should we call it a day?
Were you watching anything? I don't know, because I'll call it a day.
Oh, I'm watching Baby Reindeer. Have you seen it?
What is that?
The fuck.
Jesus Christ. Oh, Gary, you have a bipedal.
On Netflix. So it's a true story about a stalker, and the guy who gets stalked, he's the director as well. So he's the actor in it. So it's the true story, and he's playing himself. And it's a little bit scary. Actually, I'm not sure if it would be out in the US because it is a British thing, but it's very, very good. My wife watched it all because obviously I'm over here in Wales at the moment, and she was like, "You've got to watch it." And I watched three or four. I watched like one each night when I go to bed, and it fucking good. Really
just
good.
Be careful, because we do these recommendations and we freak people out.
You have this would freak people out.
Craig, you have a tendency to put up some fucking wacko stuff.
I do.
You're like, you legitimately, know, if you're freaking people out left and right over there.
I've been talking about that podcast, the true crime podcast.
Oh, you're freaking him
red-handed,
out.
Red-handed, I listened to. And this week's episode was all about the Children of God, you know, the cult.
No, I don't know.
God, that's dark as well. That's great.
Dude, you literally, we get messages from our listeners saying, please stop Craig from
giving recommendations. Like,
if you're listening to this, guys, anytime Craig recommends something, you should definitely watch it, because it'll freak you out. But the guarantee, whatever Craig likes, it'll freak you out. Guaranteed. Yeah.
They have no self-control.
We've had at least three people. We have had at least three people write, you fucked their dreams up. You have fucked their dreams up, Craig.
Glad to provide a service.
Yeah.
What you listen to, watching, whatever.
What do you got, Recco?
Oh, I've been rewatching the Harry Potter movies. And they're fun. But it actually makes me want to reread the books, because I'm remembering how much better the books are than the movies. Though I did just find out, I can't remember who has the rights to this. I think it's HBO is going to be doing it. But they're remaking the Harry Potter books into a series where each season is one book. So they get to dedicate, you know, whatever, at least 8 hours to one book rather than fucking an hour and a half to 2 hours. It's just so much to cram in, and the books were so good. And actually rewatching the movies, I was like, oh wow, I thought that these were like really great, but the actors are kind of bland. They're pretty fucking bad.
I never saw them.
It's still enjoyable.
No, my wife loves them, but I've never seen any of them. No.
I never read it. Never saw it.
I guess I'm the nerd in the house.
No, it's okay.
I'll take it.
You're not the nerd. I just science and fiction, I just have a hard time with them both together. Like I'm having such a good time watching playoff basketball. I got my friend from high school. He's texting me. He's flying for an airplane's texting me because he's watching from an airplane. Poor Tomer Botner is up at 3 o'clock in the morning, jumping through the roof. And I'm texting with all these guys. We're watching the Knicks. It has been a complete pleasure. Complete pleasure and a total, like, it's been this fun thing that I'm sharing with two friends of mine, and it's been a lot of fun. So nice. All basketball.
Nice. Yeah. Okay. Go Jets or whatever you say. Right.
Knicks and six. Knicks and six, ladies and gentlemen. Knicks and six.
Knicks and six. Right. Thank you all for listening. We shall speak to you next week. Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.